Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 347 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we are starting our Small Spaces Growing series. And as you will all know, I hope you're not getting bored of me saying it, but it's such a relevant part to my life at the moment. We've just moved from a huge place to a small place. That's the simplest way I can put it. So up until very, very recently, we were managing several acres of ground. We had goats, we had sheep, we had pigs, we had over 100 hens. And now we are living in a very, very ordinary urban environment with a regular house and a very, very regular garden. And as a result, I am looking at managing a much smaller space, and I am gardening in a much smaller space, but I'm still trying to get as much as I can out of that space. So today we're going to be looking at a sort of overview of small spaces. We're actually going to be looking at some advantages and disadvantages, because believe it or not, I've found some huge advantages to working with a smaller space. But we're also going to be talking about, you know, an overview look at what you want to be doing, how you want to be thinking about managing a smaller space. And then in future episodes, we'll go on deep dives into some of the things that we talk about today. So that's what today's episode is going to be about. Before we get there, I just want to say we will be giving away a book on Friday. We'll be doing another Friday giveaway to our patrons, but this one is slightly different. Now, I've got three books that are all excellent, but they're also quite specific. So we're going to be giving away this Friday a choice of books. So if you're the lucky winner, you will have the choice of three books, because one is a beekeeping book. So it's called Keeping Bees by Vivian Head. And it's a book all about looking after apiaries. It's a hardback book, and it's a really good sort of beginner's guide, get you started with beekeeping. And if you're not into beekeeping in any way, you don't think you're ever going to keep bees, it's not something you're interested in, that might not be for you. So we're going to give you the choice of that, or The Woodland Way by Ben Law, which is a permaculture approach to sustainable woodland management. Again, not everyone is going to be in the game for, you know, looking after a woodland. So perhaps that isn't for you. And then the final book is Roger Phillips' Mushrooms, a comprehensive guide with over 1,250 detailed photographs of mushrooms and other fungi. It's mushrooms of Great Britain and Europe. So again, if you don't live in Great Britain or Europe, that might not be for you. And I have to say, though, this mushroom book, it makes my list of must-have books every time. And I'm only giving it away because I have two copies. I would never, ever, ever be without a copy of this book. So if you are into mushroom foraging, this is the book, particularly if you are in the UK or Europe. So you will have a choice. The lucky winner this Friday will have a choice between Roger Phillips' Mushrooms, Keeping Bees, and The Woodland Way. Now, it's important to say these are my books that have been used. So the Roger Phillips books in particular has been out in the field with me. It's still in excellent condition and everything is, all is in fully working order, but it's not a brand new book. So please bear that in mind. If you'd like to be included in the draw to win your choice of those three books on Friday, then all you need to do is be a patron of the show. You could do that by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. Thank you very much. Right, with that out of the way, let's get into our small spaces topic. So I want to talk a little bit about the advantages of working with a smaller space, because I think it could be very, very easy to just think of the disadvantages. Now, of course, there are disadvantages, because, well, the disadvantage is you have such a premium put on your space. Perhaps you can't do everything that you want to do. You know, another disadvantage, perhaps you can't raise larger livestock. We certainly can't have goats here at the moment, which is something that I do miss. But for all of those disadvantages, there are also some advantages, and I'm really genuinely feeling these. I'm so grateful for these advantages. So the first one is quite obvious, quite simple. It's easier to manage. So I'm not having to deal with twice a year having to spend several days cutting hedges. I'm not having to deal with, from sort of now right through till September, October, or maybe even November, having to spend 4 hours a week mowing the lawn. It's a much easier space to manage. Now, I've already been out there and weeded all of our little pots and things, and I've really enjoyed it. I can weed the whole garden in an hour or two now. We haven't really had to do very much weeding yet because we've got new no-dig beds, but just having that advantage is huge, and it means you can focus your time elsewhere and on other things. So the other thing is that it's going to be easier to avoid feeling burnout and just getting to that point, particularly at this time of year when spring has sprung. We're just looking at summer, and at this time of year things could be quite hectic. Before, it still is fairly hectic, there's still lots going on, but it's much more manageable. So I'm able to keep on top of all of our sowing, all of our transplanting, all of our weeding, and all of those associated things. And as the season goes on, we'll be doing those plus harvesting. I'm able to do all of those and still have time left over to play in my kitchen with other projects like curing bacon. So having a smaller space, it means that you don't necessarily have such huge time commitments tied up with just maintenance and general things, and I'm far less likely to reach a stage of burnout with this garden. So that's something I'm really, really grateful for. And associated to that, another benefit is obvious: less weeding. No one, I don't think, really likes weeding. I actually enjoy weeding once I get going. Once I get going, I like weeding, because I think it's nice to look back on an achievement, and you really get that with weeding, don't you? But you know, not having to do quite so much of it is definitely an advantage. And the last advantage is you can really choose, if you want to micromanage things. You can really choose exactly what's happening, where and when. You don't need to have areas that you kind of don't have time to manage and have to get on with their own stuff, especially this time of year. As I say, at this time of year, our last property, I would be worried about mowing the grass every week. I'd be worried about trimming hedges. I'd be worried about maintaining fences, whereas I don't need to do any of those things. I can just focus on the things that I want to do, and I can really, the things that I want to manage, I can manage. So when it comes to things like succession sowing, I know I can sow my seeds when they need sowing. I'm not going to have something else that I need to get done that week, and my time is going to be at less of a premium. So it's this interesting dichotomy between having a premium on the space, which there really is. You know, every single piece of ground has a premium, and we need to really, really focus on making it work. But at the same time, we don't have quite such a premium on our time, so we're able to spend more time achieving those goals. It's a really interesting place to be, and I have to say I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So when we talk about a premium on our space, then we need to kind of think about things much more closely. So things like the fertility of the ground is going to be important, because we really need to get so much out of every piece of ground. We can't afford to have a piece of ground not very productive. So fertility of the ground becomes even more important. The choices of our crops become even more important. So I've been in the habit of using something of a scattergun approach with regards to what we would grow. I could afford to have a big block of asparagus peas one year just to try them before I realized, you know, they're not for us. We don't enjoy them. They're not worth growing. But I could afford to do these experiments every year. I could afford to have 30 or 40. In one year, I think we had sort of 60 tomato plants just planted out all over the property. All, you know, these were the seedlings that otherwise we just would have discarded. They weren't the seedlings we were going to grow on in our polytunnel or in our outside bed. They were outside of those areas, and we just grew them along a fence line by our pig wood with the idea that the pigs could eat them through the fence. You know, so those things we don't have, but at the same time, it just means that we need to focus our attention where it matters. So, like I say, the premium on space means we need to be really more discerning about our choice of crops. So perhaps we're going to be a little bit more picky about which seedlings make the cut. Whereas before, like I said, I'd always find a home for all of the seedlings that made it through. Another thing that comes out of having a premium on space is the idea of pest control. So again, at my previous property, I just entered a war of attrition with our pets, and I would just grow so much that I just wasn't really that worried about it, and I didn't give nearly as much attention to pest control as I am here. So these are all differences and things that I'm definitely seeing already, even though we're only, I don't know, what are we, sort of 3 weeks into our growing here? We planted our seedlings 3 weeks ago. We've moved in 4 or 5 weeks ago, and it took us a couple of weeks to get our beds established. So we're right at the infancy of our learning in this space. But already I'm seeing these differences, and I'm treating them with excitement. And I'm going to really enjoy this process of learning how to manage this smaller space. And when you're managing any space, you're going to want to spend some time and energy on planning it. But planning becomes even more critical in a smaller space, because just the downside of getting something wrong, the downside of putting something in the wrong place or planting something at the wrong time, you're going to feel that much more in a smaller space than you will on a larger space when you can try all these different things at the same time. So avoiding failures, I think, is probably the underlying driver between the difference in mentality from where I was to where I am, avoiding those failures, because failures were something that I was just very comfortable with and was allowing everywhere. You know, I would just be throwing all sorts of stuff in the ground and seeing what grew, and avoiding those failures is something I'm going to be very, very keen on. So things like weeding, you know, I used to be far less diligent with my weeding than I will be here, but it's a double-edged sword because it's going to be easier for me to be more diligent in this smaller space. So, you know, it's not like it's going to be a hardship, but I'm going to be far more diligent with my weeding because it's really important that my crops don't have that competition. Whereas before, I wasn't too worried because we were growing so many, I didn't need every plant to produce quite as prolifically as I kind of feel I need them to here. And when I talk about avoiding failures, I don't mean my failures. I mean failures with the plants. I'm still very happy to make lots of mistakes. And, you know, if anything, and I've said this several times, I think that's my biggest strength when it comes to doing this kind of thing, is I'm quite happy making, and of course the important thing, learning from my mistakes. So avoiding those failures, I think, is going to be the underlying issue that drives everything else. So I'm going to talk about a few of those things in a little bit more depth now. So fertility of the ground. Like I've said, it's really important that we get the most out of our ground. So it's really important that we exercise all of those good first practices, all of those good first principles, to make sure that our fertility is up there. We're going to be using, obviously, a no-dig garden bed. We're going to be introducing compost to it every year. We're going to be introducing mulch to it. I'm not sure yet what those systems are going to look like, because we're not able to get wood chip delivered here, for example. So we will figure that out as we go. But, you know, concentrating on the fertility of the soil is going to be really, really important. And we're going to be doing everything that we did before and just building up that soil using really good first principles and composting and no-dig gardening. So we're going to allow that soil food web to thrive. So that's the first thing. The next thing is about crop choice. And I'm really having to follow my own advice for the first time now, because it's really important that we choose crops that we're going to eat. There's no point in growing lots of things that my family isn't going to really, really enjoy. The chances this year of us being self-sufficient in very much at all is really slim. So we're going to be subsidizing what we pick. So there's no point in harvesting things from the garden that isn't really, really enjoyed by my family and used in the kitchen. There's just no point in doing that when we're going to be subsidising from the supermarket anyway, so we can focus on the things that we would otherwise be buying. And that's going to vary for everyone, but I think, you know, crop choice is really important. And it doesn't just come down to what you're going to eat. That's a huge part of it. But as I always say, there's three or four legs to this particular item. So it's what you're going to eat, what you're going to enjoy, but it's also what's going to grow well in your area, what you know you can grow really well. So we're using all of that experience that we've got before to grow things that we know we're going to grow really well. We're also using things that give a really good yield. So things like beans and tomatoes, things that give a really great yield for what you grow. And the final thing is thinking a little bit about cost efficiencies. So what costs a lot of money if you were to buy it at the supermarket? So those are how we've made our choices this year. And we're concentrating on lots of different things. We've still got lots of variety out there, but we're concentrating on things that fill those categories. So, you know, some of the staples that we always talk about, like beetroot and beans, lots of different types of beans. We're also growing quite a lot of brassicas and tomatoes, peppers and cucumbers and courgettes. So cucumbers and courgettes, we've got, I think, two cucumber plants, which when they are up and running in the summer, they're going to give us with all the cucumbers we can use. And the same with the courgettes, just two courgette plants are going to give us plenty to use and preserve. And then I think we've got something like 8 or 10 tomato plants in the polytunnel and another few outside, and some chili plants. So these are all things that we're really going to make the most of that space with. And the other thing that I mentioned previously, along with soil fertility and crop choice, was pest control. And this is something I'm really learning for the first time. And we've obviously, as you all know, we've built our big brassica cage, and the stark difference between the plants we have inside that and we had some surplus brassicas when we planted our seedlings out that they went outside, and the difference between them is night and day. I can tell now that the brassicas we've got outside of our brassica cage are probably not going to make it, at least a large portion of them are not going to make it. But I have to say, I'm not too worried about that, because I could use that space for other things. And like I say, they were just surplus plants. We've got the right amount in our brassica cage, I think. So leading on from that, it's again getting back to those really important things that we all know and that I talk about all the time. Succession sowing is going to be huge, making sure that we don't have bare soil. So when something comes out the ground, we have something ready to go back in it. And I'm going to be really, really diligent about our winter crops this year. And I want to make sure that we have an absolutely full garden of winter crops this year. So I don't want to have barren spaces. So that's something that we're going to be definitely focusing on. And intercropping, putting some fast crops in between your slower crops, putting some small stuff in between your bigger stuff. So when you've got a large plant that wants quite a bit of space, particularly a slow long season crop, think things like Brussels sprouts. So a Brussels sprout patch is going to have Brussels sprout plants that are fairly well spaced, but they're a really long season crop. So in between them, maybe we could grow some lettuce or some radish or something that's going to grow that little bit quicker. And we're going to be able to crop that in between and intercrop. So these are all really important principles that we're going to be practicing and learning again and honing. And I have to say, I am, as I've said before, I'm really excited and I'm really enjoying this experience. So that was the first in our series on small spaces. And next Monday, we'll be back and we'll start dealing with individual aspects of small space gardening in much more depth. And over this series, we'll be covering things like vertical growing, we'll be covering container growing, we'll be covering, you know, exactly which plants give you the most return per square foot. We'll be covering all of those things and, you know, making the most of your small spaces, how to create more space in your small space garden for growing even more things. These are all things we'll be talking about over the coming few weeks. So that wraps it up. Again, just a quick reminder, if you want to be included in Friday's draw, please consider becoming a patron of the show at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. But that's going to wrap us up for today. Thanks ever so much for listening, guys, and I will speak to you on Wednesday. Cheers. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.